Good evening, Rabbi Isai. Just want to repeat what I said yesterday. Be'ezus Hashem, this Shabbos morning, I'm going to daven in the main sanctuary, Shachris, at 8:45. I'm starting from Shaykh and Ad. That's my plan to participate this week. And I hope that Be'ezus Hashem, little by little, will be able to get the basic necessities back functioning properly in a manner which is helpful for all the members of the shul. It's not a one-day process, not a one-week process, but little by little, Be'ezus Hashem, I hope that we, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, will help that we'll come back to a more normal or a very normal type of situation over time. I have a very interesting question, Danny. Thank you for the very good question. Appreciate it. And tell me, where are the cherries, by the way? You know, that you didn't tell me.
72nd and 141st Street.
I see. I figured it must be over there because I got the same question for somebody else on the street. So I figured there must be somewhere on that block. Kitzur Advarim, the Shaila is like this. There's a tree which is growing in somebody's front yard and it overhangs the street. Is it permissible to pick the cherries? And there's a whole question in the halacha. The rest is a question of the halacha, and then there's a practical side to it too. After we deal with the halacha, there's a question, is a machlokas Rabban Shmuel and Shas, that how we view a tree. Do we view a tree based on what the trunk of the tree is, or we view a tree in terms of the branch is viewed in its own right? So that would reflect upon this halacha, that it would seem if we follow the branch and the branch were overhanging the public property, it would be considered public. If we follow the trunk of the tree, then it would be considered private. And there's a machlekes. Now, a very odd thing about this is the Tor Shulchan Aruch, in one place he brings Rav's Psak, and one place he brings Shmuel Psak. So in one place he says he follow the trunk, in one place he says he follow the branches. So I believe the Bach writes that what he makes of the Torah is, what the Torah is telling us is that this follows what the Minhag HaMedina is, meaning what is the local Minhag HaMedina is defined, what are the municipal laws. According to municipal law, that would determine which one is true. In other words, if there's no municipal law, so Rabban Shmuel Lava Machlekes, but if there is a municipal law, we would follow the municipal law in determining the ownership of the tree in that regard. Now, that, as I said, is a halachic man, and I have no idea. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know what the municipal law in this regard is. You may know, I don't know. But I'm also telling you, as a rabbi, from a practical standpoint, that even if strictly, in terms of the Tor Shulchan Aruch, that the part that's overhanging the street would be considered public property, but I don't advise that anyone go and take the fruit that's hanging over the street, and for the very simple reason that one of the things we like to do is we have to have emes and we like to have shalom. And emes means the halacha, and shalom means how to keep harmony. And if I'm going to go and take the cherries from such a tree, there's not going to be harmony. That I can guarantee you. I have enough experience in the rabbinate and in life to tell you there's going to be machlekes, bloody machlekes. So, mameila, even if according to the municipal law, the passersby would have a right to partake of it, but I would certainly strongly suggest that they not do so. Because as we're out to do, we want to keep emes and shalom. Shalom is certainly not going to keep it in such fashion. So I would certainly suggest staying clear of it.
Rav Elcher, if I could interrupt just when I qualified the question, that the trunk of the tree is actually in the public property as well, because the property line is well beyond the sidewalk line, and people normally encroach on the public property when they put their fences and their gardens out to the sidewalk. But in fact, for about 8 feet or so from the sidewalk inboard is public property.
Yeah, so that's certainly, well, it could very well likely be, if it's altogether planted on public property, then the halacha may be clear, in fact, that it is public property. But as I said, my consideration of machlokes certainly remains.
Sure, thank you.
So as I said, Alpidin, probably if you snuck there in the middle of the night and you took a few cherries and nobody saw you, probably kosher Alpidin. But if your neighbor sees you, that say, I suggest you sell your house and move to a new block. The machlokes is never going to end.
Sure.
Now, okay, so this is now the very next question. That's how I knew it's on your block. If there's someone else on your block that asked the same question. So I figured it must be on your block. If people on your block are asking this question. When reciting Shema, now this is after Tehillim. In other words, normally in Shul we daven at 9:30 at night. Is open throughout the entire year is always after Tehillim. But in the present milieu, certainly we are often davening. Even the minyanim that are taking place are usually from Mincha Maariv. We don't want to have a protracted period of time that people are together, just for the sake of promoting, you know, social distancing and health. And consequently, we are davening Maariv right after Shkia in the minyanim that we have. So all of us have to repeat the Kriya Shema later when we go home. So a very interesting question. Should we recite, when we're saying the Kriya Shema, Emes at the end, the word Emes at the end of the Kriya Shema? Now, the reality is we only have the word Emes as part of Kriya Shema. For us, for the individual that recites it, is not really part of Kriya Shema. There's an inyan not to make an interruption in between the end of Kriya Shema with Zentani Hashem Alokechem and Emes. The Gemara has a reason for it, based on a pasuk of Hashem Alokim Emes. We don't make an interruption, we go straight into the start of the bracha. The Shliach Tzibur, which says Hashem Alokechem Emes, and that's to add three words. And the Shliach Tzibur's Emes is also, he said it himself usually, and now the extra three words are reflective on Kriya Shema. And that's for the reason that Kriya Shema has 245 words in it. And we want to bring the number up to 248, because 248 represents all the varied parts of the human body. And it would imply that we are totally, in a totality, we accept all Malchus Shemayim over all of us. Now, the minig is that when one davens Yechidus, one says Kel Melech Nemo. So if one is repeating all three parshiyos at night, for the sake of being Yotze Kriya Shema, so it's Yechidus, so we can start with Kel Melech Nemo. So we already have the three words, bring it up to 248. So there's really no reason to have to say Emes at the end, even though I think the common practice is that people do say Emes, but I think halachically there's no need to do so. On the other hand, if one was Yotze Kriya Shema already, and one is saying Kriya Shema Lamita, often many people just say the first parsha, then in actuality, there's no need to say Kel Melech Nama, because the whole Kel Melech Nama is when we're saying all three parshas to bring it up to 248. Now, they did note that Rabbi Yoshev, when he said Kriya Shema Alamita, he used to say Kel Melech Nama. So they asked him about it. So he says, the reality is I don't have to say it, but I'm used to saying it from the times, I guess, as he got older. We had it down in Yechidus at times. So I got used to saying Kel Melech Nama. So I'm used to saying it when I begin the Kriya Shema Alamita. But in reality, it has no part in Kriya Shema Alamita. So I don't think it's, as I said, necessary up to them, but I think the practice is to do so. Now, this is sort of what happens more so in a Sephardish shul than in an Ashkenazi shul. One is davening in the shul with Aron Kodesh, is not in the Eastern world, but the seat you're sitting in is facing east. You face Aron Kodesh or face east. Now, in Sephardish shul, in classic Sephardish shuls, the seats were sort of in a U, and they all face towards the center of the shul. So one sits facing whatever direction his seat is in. And by Shmon Esrei, one would have faced Mizrach or one would face the Aron Kodesh. And this is a classical question, which one is supposed to do. And in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman, I think Tzadik Gimel it is, states that one should face Mizrach and not face the Aron Kodesh. Later on, in the Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, there is a Gur Halacha, which indicates that one should face the Aron Kodesh. And it's actually a machlokes of the Rishonim, the Nitziv records, as I pointed out in a sugya of Maspala Acharei Beis HaKnesses in Masechta Brachos. It's actually a machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos, as explained by Rabbi Yoina. If you're outside a shul, behind the Mizrach wall of the shul, so where do you daven? Do you face the shul towards the shul, or you face Mizrach with the rest of the shul? There's actually a machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos about it. So according to the view that you face the shul, you don't face Mizrach, it's because the Aron Kodesh itself is considered sort of, in a mini sense, like the Kotcha Kotcha. And therefore, if you daven behind the Kotcha Kotcha, as the Rabbi Yehuda says, you would face the Kodesh, you wouldn't face Mizrach. So that is the common practice. In most places, they follow really what the Nativ recorded in his Tshuvas, but he said, our Mokra, for he did not recall it. The Mokra I pointed out now, the first paragraph of the Brochus, from the Chodesh of Nessus. And you know, common practices in most places, they face the Aron Kodesh when they daven. But when you see that, you know, whatever direction he faces, it faces. I mean, obviously, you don't want to be sitting with your back to the Aron Kodesh, they're not. But usually, shuls are not arranged in such fashion. They're arranged that it's sort of U-shaped. And there may be some people that ever see it actually on the Mizrach itself, but their backs are not in Aron Kodesh or against the wall. Isa, you had a question? Okay.
I just wanted to mention, if I could, from my experience, in Yeshiva University, in the main base medrash, Rav David Lifshitz, the base medrash used to face north. And there were a lot of mispalalim that, you know, they following Rav David Lifshitz, they used to face 45 degrees. In fact, they had even the wall, they actually made a 45 degree wall for Rav David Lifshitz that he could face sort of like halfway to the east and halfway towards the Aron Kodesh. So it was like a compromise. So that way he would be Yotze Kol HaDeis.
Okay, but as I said, that's not, you know, this you might find in yeshivas, but I have, you know, all types of, you know, the group thing and the pull it. But in shuls, the minig is to face the Aron Kodesh. And if you actually go in Williamsburg, the way that the Aron Kodesh faces is sort of the Mizrach, but it's not exactly.
That's right, yeah.
Mizrach. But everyone faces
Yeah. By the way, about the what you mentioned with Rebbe Yoshua, so he didn't say all three parshiyos Alamita?
It seems not so. That's what I gather from the Pesachim that I've seen. Now, does it make a difference if you're sitting in Ezra's? No, it makes no difference if you're sitting in Ezra's Noshim. You sit facing whatever direction you see faces. This is a very interesting question. It's very relevant in this age of the outdoor minyanim. Does one lean on their hand when saying Tachter on an outdoor minyan when they say the Torah is not outdoors but rather in the house? So I think certainly I don't lean on my hand. There's no Aron Kodesh there. There's no Sefer Torah there. There's never a Sefer Torah kept there. It's not a base of Knesset. So any of the reasons that one could argue about perhaps to lean on one's hand, but in an outdoor minyan, I don't do so. I don't see the basis for doing so. So I don't do it when we dive in outside. Unless if the Aron Kodesh, it happens to be a situation that I had already brought out to say the Torah before we did Tachnu, so then I would put my head down on my hands. I don't know exactly. Is there an issue to eat outdoors, such as at a picnic or an outdoor dining? I mean, the Rambam did not like the Oichel B'Shuv. That's true. And he considered a chisaron of being a mensch, the Oichel B'Shuv. But Oichel B'Shuv is in a way which people don't eat, like to walk down the street chomping on a piece of chicken, you know. Pass for a truck driver, not for a mensch. But in a place where it's normal to dine, whether it's a park or whether it's a cafe, etc., where people normally dine there, it's not a chisaron and kavod habrius to eat in such a place. Even though I did know people, I knew people that wouldn't even in a restaurant. That was not tsanua enough for them. But as I said, that's dealing with tzaddikim and beaten that lived their life on a very, very high lefnimushuras adin level, and we just see this. They have different hasogas, those beaten. But we're talking it's clearly mitzaradin, if it's a place that people normally eat, just because it's visible from the street or it's a park, there would be no problem eating in such a place. A sharp, green-handled parva cutting knife was mistakenly used to cut a hot piece of bagel. Is the knife still powerful? Not quite. You cut a hot piece of bagel with a powerful knife, you now own a new milchik knife. So now we come to the next question, do we need or can we kasher it? And the answer is yes, we could kasher it. We kasher it the way it's usually used. And therefore, hagola suffices for it. So you take steel wool, or something very abrasive, and you scrub it well to make sure that it's 100% clean. You put it away for 24 hours, and after that, you put it into a pot of water with a rolling boil, and then you put it into cold water after that. So as long as knives can be kosher, assuming that the handle is tightly attached, which is the case with modern knives, the way they're made is that the handle of the knife, there's no space in between the handle and the knife. If the space between the handle and the knife, then it becomes a whole issue that maybe there's food that's in between them, and that food is also treif now, and you can't kasha the knife properly. But in the modern knives that we have, where the handles are very tightly attached, they're molded really to the handle, and there's no space in between the handle and the knife, there's no problem kasha. Someone asked, you know, the old crank windows, you know, that you have a crank and the window goes in and out. You know, it's swings out with a crank, it swings back in with a crank, or sometimes up and down with a crank. What happens if the crank fell off on Shabbos? Someone put it back to open or close the window on Shabbos. So the basic story is that if it's that loose, that it's going to constantly fall out, and there's no means, there's no screw, whatever, to make it tight, so one would be allowed to put it back. But if it can actually be tightened again and made tight, it's on the thing, either it fits tightly or there's a screw and you can actually tighten the screw and make it tight, then one would not be allowed to put it back on Shabbos. Then it would be considered a tikkun or a chash that you may come to make it. So I suggest that you get your cranks in order before Shabbos, if you have such windows. Here's a halacha. There are halachas which are almost not relevant bismanedo because of the technological age in which we live. Here's one of them. There's a halacha that if you didn't see a person for 30 days, there's a brinyan of chayabes for a year, whatever it is. A month you say shechayonu, a year you say chayabes. But we're not knowing to make these brachos nowadays because those brachos were made when a person went away, and I had no idea where the person is and what he's doing, and no means of knowing. Nowadays, with all the communication that we have, so when a person is away, if something would be different about him, I would hear about it. If it's a person that it's really on that friendly and that meaningful to me, I would hear about it. It's unlikely I wouldn't hear about it. And therefore, we tend not to make these brachos bismaneinu. We're saying we always have a certain level of information about the people that we care about, even if we didn't see them in the last wall. It's not like a guy got on a boat once upon a time and there was no communication and he went off to the other side of the world. And who knows if I'll ever hear from him again, who knows what's doing with him, and there's no means of doing with him. And then the guy showed up 2 years later. I say, M'chaya Mason, because who knows what could have been with him. Nowadays, with the communication that we have, in 1 second, we have an email, we know exactly what's going on. So we tend not to make these brachos. Should a shliach tzibur take 3 steps back after chazoras hashatz or chatz kaddish, or someone replace him for asher yevon tzibur? So normally at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, we take 3 steps back. And the chazan were not particular to do so because when he finishes the kabbal, which is the end of his being shliach tzibur, and the end really of the tefillah, he will take the 3 steps back. So we're not so mocked by a chazan that he has to take 3 steps back after chazoras hashatz. Now, however, if he does follow, and it's a Ramah, some people have challenged the Psak. And how is it that a new Chazan is coming in Ashrei, and he wasn't the one that says Chazan Shasat, if he's saying this Kabul, we can ask all the Kashas that we want. But this idea is in the Ramah, and Hufus Avelis, of switching the Chazan and Ashrei. So they're no lesser a figure than the Ramah signed off on the practice. So since he's not going, the Chazan is not going to take the 3 steps back at the end of after Kaddish Tiskabel because he's no longer the Chazan. So Pashta says he should take the 3 steps back at the end of Chazaras Hashatz. That would be appropriate. Now there's some things if we forget about, they're not problematic. Not everything in Jewish life that we forget about is a problem. And one of them is a person made an Erev Tavshil and he forgot to eat the Erev Tavshil. In actuality, there's no halachic requirement to eat the Erev Tavshil. We eat the Erev Tavshil as part of, usually nowadays, we eat it for the Suda Shlishas, because since we used it for a mitzvah, so we use it again for another mitzvah, and therefore we use the matzah as part of the Lechem Yishnah, and we eat the food together as part of Suda Shabbos. So usually what we make, Erev Tavshilin is usually most suitable for Suda Shlishas. It's interesting. Why do we eat it for Shalosh Shudas? Came really from a much earlier time. In earlier times, they used to use, let's say they used the challah, and that's what they used for the Lechem Mishnah. So they used to use that as the second challah of a Friday night meal, the second challah of a Shabbos morning meal. And then at Shalosh Shudas, so the Shlishis, they actually cut it and ate it, so they actually used it three more times for a mitzvah before they actually consumed it. It's not the practice to do so in our world. But it's remained from earlier times that it re-eated at Shalosh Shudas, Suda Shlishis. I mean, there's no reason you have to wait till Suda Shlishis, other than that's the way to do things. You can eat it Friday night, you can eat it Shabbos morning, you can eat it Suda Shlishis. But it's a zecher to the time when they actually used it three times during Shabbos or the Suda Shlishis. But there's no actual requirement, no din that's mechayev me to eat it. We eat it because it's a mitzvah to do so, was used for a mitzvah. So if a person forgot to do so, we'll eat it after Shabbos, that's all. But it does not upset in any regard the Erev Tav Shimon. Now, whenever he wants to eat it, he can eat it. Can one use the same knife sharpener for dairy and meat knives? Theoretically, yes. They usually don't reach, especially at home. They don't tend to reach yatzo leathers. They don't get that hot. But that's not a very good idea to do it, because sometimes there is ba'en. When you're sharpening a knife, it may not be 100% clean. And then the fatty substance residue comes off on the knife sharpener. And now I'm taking a parver or a milchuk knife and sharpening it on the same sharpener. And it could, in fact, wind up with a meat residue on it. So as I said, it's not a din mistaver, it's mutter, but it's not a wise practice. This is a question that's almost a weekly recurring question now, because it's again relevant with the outdoor minyanim that we have. And that is, do we say Morgan Obis that an outdoor minyan has been going on for many weeks? I'm not comfortable with the idea, since it's not meant to be kfiyas, as I mentioned, it's not meant to be permanent. It's not a base of knesses in any regard. It's not a minyan associated directly with the dual with the base of knesses itself. So consequently, I don't recite it in such a context. In a dominion that we have outside my home, we don't recite it. If there's a one that's associated with the Beis HaKnesses, whether it's in a different room in the Beis HaKnesses, I certainly would not be concerned that I would recite it. As long as it's in the building of the Beis HaKnesses, I certainly would recite the Mogen Olos. If it's right outside the Beis HaKnesses, and it's, if it's a kfiyistic minyan, in other words, they go to the shuls like Itzkowitz in Bnei Brak, where they always have outdoor minyanim, they always, forever, every month of Shabbos and Bias HaGoyel, and after Bias HaGoyel, there will be minyanim outside. So on Friday night, if they had a minyan outside, you would also say Mogen Olos. But a shul that makes an outdoor minyan now just for Mogen Olos, and they normally don't have an outdoor minyan, I would be gun-shy. I would not make the bracha of Mogen Olos outside the Beis HaKnesses. But any place in the building of the Beis HaKnesses, I would consider part of the kfiyas of the Beis HaKnesses, even if it's in a room where they don't normally have a minyan, and I would recite Mogen Olos in such a minyan. Okay, let's open the floor a little bit to questions, or what you say?
Hello. Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, somebody.
Yes, this is Yecheskel Rosenberg.
Okay.
How are you, Rabbi?
Okay, how are you, Rabbi Yecheskel?
Baruch Hashem. So I was wondering about the use of Clorox wipes on Shabbos and or Yontif to disinfect.
As far as I know, what I've seen, that the dampness is very minimal. I did not see that there's a shechita issue with these type of wipes. And I think, especially under the current circumstances, it's mutter, but I think in general it's mutter. I do not have an issue with that.
Okay, thank you.
Richie Gawanta.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you, yes.
Okay. So I was davening in the minyan by the yeshiva where they have the main minyan is in the base medrash, and then they have the Ezra's Nashim is split up into sections. Each section has 10, supposed to have 10 people in it. And if there was one section that had like 7 or 8 people in it, another section had 12 or something in it. So the question is if we're basically mitzdarif with the main base medrash, where the chazan is, does it matter that there's not 10 in my section? Is there a milah to having 10 in that section?
Listen, if it's better if there wouldn't be a separation, but as long as they can see the chazan from where they are, the people see each other in the minyan, from this minyan to that, where they can be mitzdarif. Under the circumstances, as I said, that we have to keep some distance, so there's not much choice. Okay, Yossi.
But there's a mile of that.
It'd be a mile if there would be 10 on each side, yes.
There's a mile of having.
Regular what? When we don't have the issue of the social distancing, we certainly don't like to have a mechitza in between. You never daven with Rav Shechter Shlito, Rav Shechter Shlito, Mishim University. It's very makbid always to be exactly in the room with a davening, not to be behind in another room, in an interroom, in a connecting room, but to be mamish in the room with a davening. Yossi.
Yeah. Hello, Rabbi. There are times when we'll go out and for Shabbos we'll buy like a 6-pack of challah rolls. Some stores have the bag that it comes in closed with a twist tie, and others have it closed with a piece of tape. If we buy the ones with the tape, can we just tear the tape without destroying the bag?
You can destroy the bag. That's whatever. You can cut through
the tape. You don't want to destroy the bag.
It's not a problem. Don't open the tape. Either cut through the tape or cut through the bag. Don't pull the tape.
Can we cut the tape in half?
I usually just cut the end of the bag off. That's all, under the tape. Uh-huh. Okay. But the worst of the possibilities is to pull the tape apart. That's the most chance.
Okay.
Gary.
Okay, I have to preface this. I grew up in L.A. long time ago.
Where?
I grew up in Los Angeles a very, very long time ago. Okay? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. There was terrible rioting in Los Angeles, and the police did not help them for the first night at all. And a lot of stores were vandalized, and the people went into, and then the rioters went into people's properties, and they defaced, also in Beverly Hills, kill the Jews. So what I'm going to ask you your personal opinion that. With de Blasio now saying that we are going to defund the police and put a lot of money into social programs, do we now have to plan that our community should be patrolled, like in Los Angeles, by volunteers, similar to Hatzalah, where we have to really fend for ourselves in many cases if the police will not respond? And I also like to know what the rabbi thinks about Jewish leaders who have now come out and said, you know, in rallies with signs, Black Lives Matter, which is really, according to Malcolm Honlein, is a anti-Jewish organization. I'd like to see your personal viewpoint, if you would share it with us.
I don't believe much is going to change with the police. I mean, this mayor is going to be gone pretty soon. Governor Cuomo has said he's certainly not signing off on what Bill de Blasio wants to do. And I certainly hope not much comes of it. It's rather foolishness to cut back in the police department. A lot has been written. I mean, unfortunately, the ones that are most likely to suffer if they do such things are going to be in the minority community. This is a statistical fact. And as I said, I feel bad that the public as a whole, whoever they may be, should be underserved and that crime is going to go up. But the experience is that when we attack the police, crime doesn't usually go up in the city. The policemen become more skittish. We have in Chicago, where they've gone through this process, it's almost the murder capital of America today. In one weekend, there were like 20 or 25 murders just one of the last weekends, the end of May. and principally in minority communities. But as I said, all of us need to be concerned. And if we will reach a point that we have to take steps to protect ourselves, we'll have to take steps to protect ourselves. I don't think that it's a matter of volunteers. I think it's a matter of hiring people that are trained and have the right to use firearms, so that people are deterred from that. They don't feel that this is a place that they should come to. I don't want to bring harm to anyone, but they also have to know that they can't overrun the defenses either. It's not healthcare. So, as I said, what the future will bring, we'll see. And as I say, Malcolm Holman is certainly more astute than I am in terms of what all of these groups are about. And as I said, so I'm not going to pass comment on Malcolm Holman. I have to say in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
Isa.
We're getting back to Parashaila. With the shots stepping back after the Shemoneh Esrei or not. So if there's a second shot, so I could see there's a problem that he should step back. Well, what if it's the same shots that's davening the whole davening, but it's a day of laning? So,
we're not so mocked on it. That's because
day of laning, he steps away from the Amid. I mean,
he came, but he's still not finished his tough in the Shliach Tzibur.
Mm-hmm. So he does not have to step back.
I don't think we know
until later.
Not to this, as far as I know.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was knowing. Can I ask one more quick thing? I bought a toaster yesterday, so the first thing they asked me is, he says there's a guy in the back who'll tovel it for you. So I said, no, I don't tovel my toasters because according to the Psak of Moshe. Because why should I worry about getting spoiled if Rav Moshe says that you don't have to tovel it? But what is Rav Moshe's cheshbon here, really? Would you know?
Yeah, Rav Moshe's cheshbon for toast is very simple. Rav Moshe did not consider making toast of any halachic significance in terms of an act of bishul. Namela is not doing anything halachically. So what do I have to do? It's not a kli. Oichel, it's not processing oichel, it's not doing anything to the oichel. We're talking toasters, not toaster ovens.
Yeah, toasters, right.
Toasters, so, a toaster oven, at least the rats you have to do, because you do actual real cooking in that toaster oven. It's a different story.
So since it's just as edible without the toasting, so it's really not...
he did not consider toasting to be of any significance whatsoever.
Right. Thank you.
Richard Corker.
Yes, those things that you put over the toilet that when you flush, they supposedly clean as you flush. Are those a problem on Shabbos?
No, they're not a problem on Shabbos. There's no mice to be a dying of. The water just runs over it and dissolves it. The color is incidental. And what's interesting, I discussed the Shiloh once. It was a big guy. He has a son-in-law that lives on my block. He lived in Monticello for many, many, many years by himself. Rav Schneider was his name. Zefer Tzadik Lebrocha. It was a big guy, and I had a friend that was friendly with him, and I went to visit him once. It was one of the Shai, we discussed the Shai. It's a Nimnu Vigomer than its mutter.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a shayla that came in writing. What happens if the toilet gets stuck on the flap so that the water keeps running and one fixes the problem in the tank? I don't think it's a real tikkun that's involved. Things get a little bit, slightly out of place, and you just push them back down again. You flip the thing off, the balloon off. It went slightly out of kilter. I don't think that's a real tikkun. If the chain falls off, I'm not so sure that you should put it back on Shabbos. I have Sforos Lahokal, the chain that pulls it up. I have Sforos Lahokal, but I'm not ready to pass it that it's mutter, but certainly one could, even if the chain is not working, there's ample way to use if it would be toilet on Shabbos, but pulling it up with your hand, that certainly would be mutter. And I'll think about, I'll be my eye and more about the chain. As I said, I'm not to the hokel, but I'm not ready to pass. So, any further questions, Rabbi Yisai? Moshe Bernstein.
Hi, Rabbi. What's the story with asparagus? Are you able to kosher it? And if so, how?
I don't know if you can kosher it. You turn to your kosher agencies. As I say, I don't give advice on this subject. I leave it to the national kosher agencies. I personally don't, use ones that I have to check. To the largest extent, we don't check vegetables in our house. We buy ones that are pre-checked to the largest extent. And I think that that's just a lot, maybe cost more money, but it is a lot better in kosher than attempting to check them on my own. So I would suggest that you turn to the kosher agencies if they have any sort of suggestions for you, which part of the asparagus you can check, the tips you can check and you can check, etc.
Rabbi, you say to buy from bags, even by lettuce?
I buy everything that needs to be checked, basically. Lettuce, romaine lettuce, whatever. I buy it. Usually we buy it with a have pre-washed with a hechsher.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yossi.
I sent a message, but in the past I've called the Star K regarding asparagus, and they said that the white asparagus doesn't need to be checked. It's the purple and green that do. So Seasons sells white asparagus, and Fairway sell white asparagus.
So they said the white doesn't need to be checked.
Right. That's what they said in the past, and like it's been several years since I asked them.
Okay.
Because the white is never gets above the ground. It's in the ground the whole time, so that it doesn't get bugs.
Thank you.
It's unripe. It's not yet ripened.
I got it. Okay. Mendel.
Good evening, Rabbi.
Good evening.
This may be a premature question because we don't know what the governor is going to say about sleepaway camps. But camps, day camps or sleepaway camps that open under CDC guidelines, is that something that we can consider safe for our children? Is that satisfactory?
I believe that if the CDC signs off on it, we should consider it safe. As I say, we don't know exactly what this disease is about. Far from it. This is where it's basically we're learning new things every day about it. But to the largest extent, nothing is absolute. But to the largest extent, children are not completely affected by it. Children till about the age of 15. Not seem to be too affected by it. It also seems to be that it's very rare that a child of that age, even if they would become infected, would turn around and get an infected adult. It seems to be very rare. And it also seems to be that in the greatest number of cases, if children do have it, it is extremely, extremely mild. So that I would, listen, every person has to determine their own comfort level in this world.
What would the Rav say about older teenagers or adults who work in camps?
Listen, everyone has their job to do. And I said, I can't, there's only X amount of time that we can all stay home. As rich as America is, at some point we all have to go, but we got to go back to work, The government can't just keep on giving us money forever.
But in terms of the recreational aspect for older teenager or someone who doesn't necessarily...
The recreational aspects are very important. I mean, what I dread, I have to tell you, our children are home for 3 months now. What Khalilah is going to be if they're home for another 3 months? And 3 months with no structure, right? The schools are going to be closed. I dread the thought. So to me, the fact of people having, teenagers, et cetera, children having recreation, it's not only a question of recreation for their physical and mental health, but for their spiritual health as well. Chazal have warned us that batala, idleness, when a person doesn't have what to do, is one of the most dangerous states in life. So I'm very, very concerned. And as I said, the information coming over the wire, I hope that it's going to change, but the information coming over the wire is that it does not look like the camps in New York State are going to open. That's what's coming over the wire. That's what I'm hearing from people that are, you know, involved in it. They say that the final statement is going to be made Friday on this. So we'll see. As I said, I'm hoping that somehow the Rabbeinu Shalom will help, that we'll find a way to get them open. I think it's necessary for the children, especially after the months that they've been through. It's a traumatic experience. It's necessary for the teenagers. And it's necessary for the guy post-high school people. What are they going to be doing this summer?
And a few adults who could use it also, Taka.
Yeah. And I was speaking to a Ram this week. Like, he says, all my Talmidim, they're all home. They have no place to go. All their summer plans are canceled. Not a healthy state of affairs.
So whatever
the a little bit, there was a Talmud that came back to Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Dimona. And he was acting a little bit out of sorts. The Mashkiach called him over. And the Mashkiach said to the Mashkiach, said, what's with you? You know, you were in Yeshiva, now it's come back. It's in a strange state. So the Talmud said to the Mashkiach, quit the Mashkiach. If the Mashkiach would spend a month in Dimona and Ben Azman, the Mashkiach would come back in better state than Yeshiva. Avi Sherman.
Thank you, Rabbi. Back to the question about the challah roll. Is it permissible to open up a twist tie on Shabbos?
Open up to what? The Gedolim in America, Paskin, the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael were skittish about it. They did not necessarily like it, but the Moshe Zatzal and Rav Shaim were both Paskin.
Open and close?
Yes.
Opening what? What was the question?
Twist ties.
Yeah. So I want to know about with Kabbalah's Tainus. There's an Indian to a half day Tainus also. Is that correct?
No.
There is no Tainus choice.
There's no such thing. I'll begin as early as a half day Tainus. In the halacha, in the Sechta Tainus, and the Hilchos Tainus in Shemarah. We have a Tainus L'Shois. But a Tainus L'Shois is the pshat that a person actually fasted a whole day. But he did not make a Kabbalah for the whole day. Whether he fasted half the day that he didn't eat, then he was with Kabbalah, got himself Mamela to finish the day fasting. Or he started the day fasting. That's the simplest case. In other words, but he added on later, he did not have the intention of fasting the whole day. And then he added on a part of the Tainus after all. There is an inyan of tshuva that for a person that is this poirish, you know, from the guy from the material world, that's tshuva, there's such an inyan. But it's not a kindness per se.
So could I thought that if you wanted to have a half a day, sometimes the Agudah calls for a half a day.
It's not a kindness.
So with the half-day tainus, there would be no inyan of being makabel tainus the mincha before.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I thought you would just use a lashon of you just say I'm be makabel tainus l'shois.
Yeah, and it's not l'shois even. It's not a tainus shows even. So as I said, I don't think that you need it. It's an inyan of tshuva because it's Purish from the Gashmis.
I mean, the reason I'm asking is because when you have a If you have a yard site, then you usually fast on the yard site. But sometimes you think you can't make it through the whole tainus. To be with kabbal tainus before the yard site, and then not to finish the tainus, so you're being say, so you're kabbalah. So what about saying when you're being kabbal tainus? If you say I'm being kabbal tainus l'shois, and therefore if you make it through the whole tainus, is avada good. And if you don't make it through the whole tainus, so you have a tainus l'shois.
I don't know if there's a kabbalah. It's not such a kabbalah. As I said, the tainus up within is a whole day.
So there's no real halachic kindness for him.
Well, Mike, there is a thing. Why do we fast on a yard site all the other? So one of the reasons that brought one of the inyan is that on the day of the yard site is a day of midas adin on the family. And the male or person fears that he should, not only for the skus of the nifter, but for his own skus, the Davish should, give him the chaper and then there was a bonus to protect him. And some even learn that out piece. That's the reason that they learned for the Gemara Roma, I believe, for the Tainus Yotze. So some learn, I thought, that this is true. And I found there was a rov, the book Kolbo and Avelis, I forgot his name.
Yeah, Rav Greenwald, I think.
Greenwald, the Ungar Sharov from Columbus, Ohio. So in the Sefer, he says, the Indian of the Tikkun, but the Chassidim. What's the Indian of the Tikkun?
Yeah.
Look at that reason of the Yotzer is the Levush, not the Ma'am. What's the Indian of the Tikkun, but the Chassidim? Because of the fact that he's under a little bit under the Midas Adin, so you make a L'chaim, you wish him L'chaim, you give him a Roch. That's the Indian of the Tikkun, but the Chassidim. Yeah. What does the Rav feel at this stage of allowing cleaning help into their homes as for coronavirus? I mean, by and large, I think that as long as you have reason to believe that they're healthy, the people can allow, you know, help into their homes. Don't sit on top of them. I mean, you know, should insist that they wear a mask. And again, ask your own doctor to make sure that your health profile is not compromised in a way which is threatened. Avi Sherman.
Sorry, I think I left my hand open before.
Okay. So, I think we're about up to the end, Rabbi. There's another question or two, I'll grab it. Otherwise, we're going to sign off. It's nice to see all of you. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach. Double Gravard, Sherman, Isa, Mark Kupner, nice to see you. Gary.